On the 1st of July, a new ethnic unity law took effect in China aimed at the integration of ethnic minorities. This week, the Tibetan Parliament in Exile issued an open letter saying that the new law deepens policies that threaten the Tibetan people's language, religion, culture, identity, and fundamental human rights. And it ends by saying lasting peace cannot be achieved through forced assimilation. Lasting unity cannot be built by erasing identity. But our next guest says that erasure of Tibetan identity is precisely what China seeks. Brahma Chalani is a geostrategist at the Center for Policy Research in New Delhi, and he recently wrote in Project Syndicate that China's erasure of Tibet is accelerating. Brahma Chalani, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
China has exercised control over Tibet since annexing it in 1951, and we'll go into its long-standing methods of control shortly. But firstly, how does the new ethnic unity law in effect since the 1st of July change things in Tibet?
The sweeping law qualifies President Xi Jinping's drive to accelerate the forced assimilation of Tibetans and other ethnic minorities into a single state-defined Chinese identity. That identity is centered on loyalty to the Chinese Communist Party. And I think the timing of the new law is no coincidence. China believes it can now complete the forced assimilation of Tibetans with little international resistance. The world has been largely silent on the developments in Tibet, just the way it has been silent on the developments in Xinjiang, where about 1 million Muslims have been incarcerated for years now. But the new ethnic law also signals another worrying trend. It is China's expanding assertion of authority beyond its borders. The new law criminalizes broadly defined threats to, quote-unquote, ethnic unity. In other words, Beijing is acquiring another legal instrument to intimidate Tibetan activists, scholars, and diaspora communities abroad. Families inside Tibet already face retaliation for the activities of relatives overseas. So we are seeing how China uses domestic law to justify acts of repression.
Yes, certainly the new laws do seem to intensify what has been a long-standing policy of the central government in Beijing. You've said that China operates on the premise that to control the child is to control the future. Could you describe for us how specifically Beijing's sought to do that in Tibet?
Well, first, we have to keep in mind that Tibet has steadily disappeared from the international agenda, overshadowed by wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, by tensions over Taiwan, and by global economic and energy uncertainty. The Tibetan question has faded into the diplomatic background. Beijing has exploited this silence to accelerate a geopolitical project that goes well beyond repression. It is seeking to erase Tibet as a distinct civilization. It's also trying to erase Tibet's very name. Beijing, in the last 3 years, has sought to replace the name Tibet with a new name, Xinjiang. Xinjiang is a Qing dynasty designation, meaning Western treasure land. And this is more than semantic engineering. It's an effort to redefine Tibet not as a historic nation, but as an inseparable province of China, whose distinct identity never truly existed. At the same time, China is seeking to create a new generation of Tibetans who think of themselves as Chinese first, not Tibetan. For decades, China had relied principally on surveillance, coercion, and security forces. Today, it is pursuing something more ambitious: engineering generations of Tibetans who no longer think of themselves as Tibetan. And at the center of that effort is a vast state-run boarding school system. According to UN experts and human rights organizations, more than 1 million Tibetan children, about 80% of all Tibetan children, have been separated from their families and are being educated largely in Mandarin in residential schools. These children are growing up alienated from their roots and conditioned to view their own culture, religion, and language through a lens of inferiority. So it's actually a colonial style strategy using boarding school system. We have seen how similar strategy was used in North America, for example, or even in Australia. And there is now growing recognition both in Canada, US, and in Australia about the costs of such practices. But what China is doing is replicating that same practice on an industrial scale. And the world hasn't spoken up on this issue.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Brahma Chalani. Brahma, you described the preferred name that China is seeking to impose for Tibet, Xinjiang. And I think you said the translation was Western Treasure Land. In terms of the treasure that is in the land, could you describe for us the geostrategic importance of the territory of Tibet to China?
Tibet is often viewed primarily through the prism of human rights. It should instead be understood as one of the world's most consequential geopolitical assets. It's a resource-rich land. First, the size of the Tibetan Plateau. It's about two-thirds the size of the entire European continent. This plateau, the Tibetan Plateau, dominates the Himalayas, and it overlooks South, Central, and Southeast Asia. More importantly, Tibet contains the headwaters of Asia's great rivers. All the big rivers of Asia, including the rivers of mainland China, originate in Tibet. There's only one major river of Asia that doesn't originate in Tibet, and that's the Ganges River, which is the lifeline for northern India and also flows into Bangladesh. That river, the Ganges River, originates on the Indian side of the Himalayas. But all the major rivers of Asia, including the lifelines of Southeast Asia, like the Mekong, Irrawaddy and Salween, originate in Tibet. And second, Tibet is very rich in strategic minerals. It is the world's largest source of lithium. So there's a little of Tibet in every smartphone that we carry. This is why China is investing so heavily in Tibet, not only through military infrastructure, mega dams, and intensive mineral resource extraction, but also through an unprecedented campaign to extinguish the very identity of the people who inhabit it. And I think that the Chinese leadership understands the simple truth. Lasting control over this vital territory ultimately requires control over history, culture, and identity. Xi Jinping's Tibet policy reflects this very logic. That's the only explanation for what China is doing, trying to erase Tibet's identity, including its culture, and also erasing its very name.
In terms of the culture and identity of Tibet, an absolutely central figure is the Dalai Lama, and there is an impending showdown in terms of the successor of the current Dalai Lama. On the 2nd of July, the Dalai Lama announced that only his foundation would choose his successor, but obviously China has different plans. Could you describe for us how the succession of the Dalai Lama could be a friction point in this process of erasure that you've described?
The succession of the Dalai Lama is a very important issue. And the Dalai Lama has not yet fully clarified how his successor would be chosen. But China is already ready. It has clearly done its part. Its strategy is similar to the one that it employed, installing a puppet Panchen Lama. The officially chosen Panchen Lama was a little boy who was abducted by China and has not been seen ever since that abduction. He's the longest serving political prisoner in modern history. And there's been no evidence of what's happened to him, whether he's alive, whether he's in prison still. So after kidnapping the Panchen Lama, Cha very quickly installed a puppet Panchen Lama. And this is exactly what it plans to do once the current Dalai Lama passes away. But I think given what we are seeing now, the systematic erasure of Tibet's identity, China has gone one step ahead that even if its anointed Dalai Lama doesn't carry legitimacy among Tibetans, just like the Chinese chosen Panchen Lama has no legitimacy among Tibetans, China knows that by erasing Tibet's identity, it'll be able to cement its hold on Tibet. So given China's current strategy, it would seem that the successor issue to the Dalai Lama no longer is that central to China's strategy. because China's strategy is now heavily focused on erasing Tibetan identity.
Brahma, you're obviously critical of the international community's response to China's coercive efforts in Tibet. Indeed, you've described the international response as silent spectatorship. Could you perhaps contrast for us some of the different international responses? I'm thinking in particular of India's role in providing a home for the Dalai Lama, and also China's diplomatic efforts to repress Tibet on the international scene.
India has been home to a large Tibetan exile community, in fact, the largest in the world, and is also home to the Tibetan government in exile. But I think for much of the democratic world, Tibet should matter. Governments that rightly condemn cultural destruction elsewhere have largely treated Tibet as a secondary issue, reluctant to jeopardize broader relations with China. That calculation ignores a fundamental reality. The assault on Tibetan identity is not separate from China's rise as a great power. In fact, it is intended to further its rise. So a permanently assimilated Tibet would consolidate China's strategic advantages. It will strengthen its control over Asia's water resources. China will secure immense deposits of strategic minerals, and it will remove what Beijing still perceives as the last potential source of political resistance in the region. And I think the international response need not be dramatic. I think small steps can be quite meaningful. Democratic governments, for example, should sanction officials responsible for the forced assimilation campaign. They should reject official pressure to replace Tibet with the new name, Xinjiang. Unfortunately, we are seeing some Western museums and other institutions actually embracing the new name Xinjiang. For example, some museums in France and Britain have started using Xinjiang in place of Tibet. And I think that's very unfortunate because the name matters. Names shape historical memory and international legitimacy. Accepting the name change means participating, however unintentionally, in the disappearance of Tibet itself. So I think modest steps can go a long way in ensuring that one of Asia's oldest civilizations is not systematically dismantled. We should not forget that Tibet is at the strategic heart of Asia. If a silent world allows China to erase Tibet identity, it would have acquiesced in the disappearance of an ancient people.
Brahma Chalani, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Glad to join.
Brahma Chalani is a geostrategist and honorary professor of strategic studies at the Center for Policy Research in New Delhi, and his piece in Project Syndicate is China's Erasure of Tibet is Accelerating.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.